You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. The Razorbacks beat Auburn over the weekend 24-14. We're going to break it all down today with Ethan Westerman here on the desk. Arkansas now 3-1 overall. 1-0 in the SEC. They're going to play the Southwest Classic on Saturday against Texas A&M down at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. A&M also 3-1, 1-0. Aggies ranked number 24. Arkansas receiving a few votes in this week's AP poll. So there's a lot of intrigue for this Razorback A&M game. That's going to be a 2:30 kickoff, by the way, on ESPN. That just got announced over the weekend. It had been placed on a six-day hold while the networks could figure out who they wanted to show. The announced team for this weekend is going to be Dave Pasch, Dusty Dvorak, and Taylor McGregor. Taylor, you know, we had her on our podcast about 3 weeks ago, and we mentioned then, Ethan, that every time that she had called a game prior to Oklahoma State, it had gone to overtime. And then lo and behold, the Oklahoma State game goes to overtime. So maybe there's another overtime game this weekend down in Dallas.
Well, there's been a lot of crazy.
There have been a lot of Arkansas A&M games that have gone to overtime.
So this one seems the most likely. You know, early in that Oklahoma State game, I was thinking, oh, yeah, that streak's going to end for her. But lo and behold, Oklahoma State came back, and then Arkansas had to come back to force overtime. So, Taylor, get ready for some extra football.
All right, you were in Auburn. You dropped about 5 pounds from all the sweat, the muggy, humid day down there at Jordan-Hare. What did you see? Like, what stood out to you?
Well, I mean, Arkansas survived a hostile environment, I'll tell you that. Jordan-Hare Stadium was every bit an electric environment on Saturday. They, you know, that just goes to show you how much football means to that fan base. I mean, they're 2-1, underwhelming with a loss to Cal, and that place was packed. They had a stripe out. The fans brought it. I'm not sure Auburn's football team did so much, but I think it was a big test for Arkansas. If nothing else, you know, it was a game that, you know, anticipated to be pretty close. But, you know, once got in that stadium, and I mean, there was a delay of game to start the game for Arkansas, and mm-hmm. I think the crowd had every bit to do with it. You know, started to think this one could maybe go away that Arkansas doesn't want it to, but they settled in, got a win. That's the most important thing. To come out 1-0 in the SEC.
You know, when Arkansas played down there 2 years ago and beat them, it was last game of Brian Harsin's tenure. He got fired, I think, the next day or 2 days later. And it was not a very packed house. Arkansas won that game 41-27, but it didn't feel like they won a game, you know, like at a traditional Jordan-Hare environment. It's kind of like when they beat LSU down in Death Valley in 2021 as – you know, the Ed Ogeron tenure was ending. That was not a typical night game at LSU. This was, though. I mean, like you're saying, this was a loud environment. It was a real hot day.
Mm-hmm.
They had to battle some things to win this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And if I remember correctly, that game they won in at Auburn a couple years back, that was an 11 a.m. kick, which might have played a part in that. But I think the main thing that played a part was there's just not much excitement around Auburn's fan base that year. On Saturday, they had a 2:30 kick. So, you know, that's you can get all your fans charged up for that one. I think that there's a lot of optimism with Hugh Freeze, you know, early in the season.
They want to believe in him.
Yeah, they want to believe in him hardcore, and it just didn't pan out on Saturday. And, I mean, he was very, very blunt after, I mean, at halftime, first of all, in the Auburn radio show or radio broadcast, he was saying in a very angry tone that they've got to find a quarterback who doesn't throw the ball away and a running back who doesn't get stripped can hold on to the ball. And then he just kept it up after the game. He just was not happy Saturday, and their fan base isn't either.
The game went about like I thought it'd go. I thought quarterback play was going to determine who won this game. And I liked Daylon Green better than I liked Hank Brown in this game. I said it last week. I thought it was going to come down to quarterback play. I like Green's ability to get outside the pocket and make plays. Better than I like Brown's ability. And I kind of thought Arkansas would bring some blitzes and some, you know, some stuff that maybe Auburn hadn't seen before. And I think that was the case. I heard Sam Pittman say after the game in his interview with Chuck Barrett on the Razorback Sports Network, you know, he said that just the idea that we were going to bring something, kind of the threat of that, rattled them maybe as much as what we were doing. But you go back to Talen, you adjust his rushing yards, which I like to do. I don't like the fact that in college football, your sacks are deducted from your quarterback's rushing yards. I like the NFL model better, where sacks are taken off of passing yards, and it because these are passing plays. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's real fair to deduce a quarterback's rushing total because something broke down in a passing play. But anyway, 107 rushing yards if you adjust it for sacks for him. And I believe that that's three consecutive weeks that he's had over 100 rushing yards when sack yardage is adjusted. Happening against Oklahoma State, happened against UAB too. Under 50% passing again. His passing has got a lot to be – it's left a lot to be desired. You go back to basically take away the first half against Oklahoma State. So let's say the last 10 quarters. I don't know exactly what his passing numbers would be, but they aren't pretty. Under 50% against UAB, under 50% Saturday in Auburn. I would guess he was probably under 50% in the second half at Oklahoma State. So he can be better passing the ball. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. But I think that anybody who's expecting like this, 65% passer, they're probably going to be left a little bit disappointed. He is doing the things right now that he did at Boise State. He is a great runner. He can make some passes, but he's also going to throw some interceptions. He's going to have some trouble completing passes. And, Ethan, he's done this without really seeing the real tough defenses that are left on Arkansas' schedule.
For sure. And you look at his numbers right now, and he's at 53.7% passing on the season. That's below what he had any season at Boise State. And those numbers weren't great there. You would anticipate that would take a dip at Arkansas. You're playing – you'd anticipate from, just an outsider view looking in that he's playing some tougher competition that's going to drop. But I think that it's not where the Razorbacks think that he could be with it. I think Bobby Petrino has a lot of faith in him. I mean, he came out for possession against Auburn, and I think the thought for a lot of people was they were just trying out Malachi Singleton to replace him because Green had just thrown an interception and the offense wasn't doing much. Turns out it was just cramps, is what Sam Pittman said. They trust him. They aren't going away from him. The people that think that Malachi Singleton's ready to be the starter and is going to replace him, I don't think they're going to be very – you can hold on to that hope, but I don't think it's going to happen. They really trust Talen Green.
The favorite quarterback's always the one who's never played.
Yeah, for
sure. And then he gets thrown in there, get him off the field, get the next guy.
Yeah, and that's what happened Saturday. He came in for a possession. He did not look comfortable. No, he did not. I mean, I wouldn't expect him to necessarily, but he was – I mean, he short-armed some throws like – very, very much short-armed him. But, yeah, Talen Green, he's seventh in the SEC in rushing yardage right now, and that's taking into account that sack, the sack yardage that is put on his official stats. He has 325 yards rushing this year. That's the most for any quarterback in the SEC. So Arkansas has a real dynamic threat with Green and Jaquinda Jackson in the running game. I think that Talen Green, there's a lot left to be desired. But end of the day, Razorbacks are 3-1, and they wouldn't be 3-1 without him. They don't. I don't think they win. I don't think they beat Auburn without him. And then UAB, you could make a case that they don't win that without him. He made some plays in that game on the ground that saved them.
Even for as poor as he played, passing wise, he even made some throws in the second half that helped out in that win. The difference with him is just the running ability. He might not throw for 300 yards, but you look up and all of a sudden he's accounted for 300, 350, something like that, because of what he adds with the running game. And you mentioned this. I just want to set the record straight because I still think that we're a couple of days removed from the game, and a lot of people think that Green got benched in the first half against Auburn. That wasn't the case. Sam Pittman said that Talen had cramps, not surprising, on a hot, humid, muggy day down there on the plains. Here's what Pittman had to say about Green and about how Green responded once he came back into the game, because after he went out, he led Arkansas on three scoring drives.
Yeah, well, we didn't bench him. He had cramps. He was cramping up and then him, getting some fluids in him and then coming back. It shows a lot about what we know about the kid from summer workouts and all, that's who we see. And offensive line wise, running backs, wide outs, tailing to go down. That was a big, big drive in the game. And for them guys to execute and get it all down, a great calling by Coach Petrino to get down there and get it in was awesome.
I was Sam Pittman after the game. When I see that room at Auburn, I get all kinds of flashbacks. I've seen so many weird things that have happened in that stadium. Yeah. It's just kind of funny seeing that.
Shout out to the guy who asked that question to Sam.
I'm guessing that was you.
He's sitting at the desk
okay.
right now.
It wasn't me. Wasn't me. Yeah.
But no, I think that was really, really an important part of the game because, you know, that's in the third quarter that he gets taken out. Just for one possession, and he comes back in on the next possession, and that's the one that he had the third and 19 pass to Satania that put him ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arkansas converted 3 of 3 third and longs on that drive, including that play came right after an intentional grounding on Taylen Green that put him way behind the chains. So, you know, he led them on a scoring drive that they never trailed again.
I thought the last drive of the game was – or not. It was not the last drive of the game, but it was Arkansas's last scoring drive. I thought that was as impressive as the first scoring drive. I thought, you know, the first scoring drive, game begins, they go down, they miss a field goal. Auburn comes down, they throw the first of 20,000 picks, and then Arkansas gets it, and they go on like a 15-play, almost 8-minute drive. That was an impressive drive, and I thought the last drive was really impressive because – it looked like Auburn was about to get the ball back with momentum down by a field goal, and then there's a pass interference call, and Arkansas says, we're not throwing the ball anymore. We're going to run. And it was, you know, Green running. Braylon Russell had a couple of nice runs during that drive. Jackson had a good run. He had the touchdown run, too, that capped it off. It was just I know Petrino gets labeled as a passing coach, but he loves a team that can run the ball. Mm-hmm. He loves it when you know, the game is on the line and they can just turn it around and they keep giving it to the running back and they keep getting first downs. I think about the LSU game in 2010 when they clinched the Sugar Bowl. That last drive against LSU, it was just run, 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 run. I think it was like 9 straight runs on this. Kind of a similar thing the other day. You know, it comes closing time against Auburn, run the ball, run the ball. And you know an old line coach like Sam Pittman, he had to love that too. That was an impressive drive, and it felt like that drive kind of broke Auburn.
Yeah, that was the drive of the game. I wrote about this. I think that was the culmination of Arkansas controlling time of possession the whole game. It was the culmination of finally that just wearing down Auburn. Arkansas had trouble running the ball for most of the game, but that drive, like you said, the final 9 plays of the drive were runs. And that chewed up 6 minutes, 12 seconds. That was a really key possession. I know Braylon Russell had a big run on that drive. Jaquindon Jackson, he just runs so hard. I'm not sure we've seen an Arkansas running back who has the ability to create that much yards after contact. And I don't remember in recent history.
Been a while.
Since a back can just kind of bully his way in the end zone like that. I think Braylon Russell, too, he can be that guy. I mean, they put him in goal line situations to power in before. He did it at UAB. But yeah, that drive was big. I know Trent Dilfer hates a Bobby Petrino team that can run the ball. He said after that game that he wanted Bobby to not be so stubborn with it. And I think they could have run the ball more against UAB. I think that Arkansas, that's the best way to get Taylen Green's arm going, is the more they can keep running the ball. And it wasn't like they had a great rushing performance at Auburn. You know, I think that's a good Auburn run defense. I don't know if Auburn's defense gets enough credit in the front seven, but I think Arkansas has established at this point, if there's one thing you know about them, it's that they have a really good running back.
Auburn's got a quarterback problem.
Major.
That's what I came away from the game. You know, one of the big takeaways, Hank Brown threw 3 interceptions. You know, he got the job because Peyton Thorne threw 4 interceptions against Cal a couple of weeks earlier. Thorne comes in at halftime. He leads them on a couple of scoring drives. I thought he played okay, but he also was picked, you know, at a critical time in the game. Hugh Freeze, as Ethan mentioned a little bit earlier, wasn't real happy with his quarterbacks after the game. He fired up the bus and put it in reverse, and here's what he had to say.
I don't have the words to it's just sickening that we can't take care of the football on offense. And I've got to get that fixed. And I think we had 431 yards. They had 334. I thought our defense, other than third and longs, if we could just get off the field on third and longs, that defensive effort would have been remarkable, truthfully. But the third and longs were, they got two third and long conversions on penalties and then converted, I think, 5 of 8 third and longs, which is just we can't do that. But they played hard on defense, and I think our offensive guys played hard. It's just discouraging. You have one possession in the first half that you don't turn the ball over as you're moving it, and we turned it over on the Arkansas 29, the 0, and the 27. I don't know how many points they got off of that, but had to be some. And obviously the possession time in the first half when you're doing that is atrocious. It's miserable to watch that.
So that was you freeze. I feel like Auburn coaches just live a very tortured existence.
Oh, my goodness. If he's going to say it's miserable to watch that, though, like, how about you go get a quarterback in the portal over the offseason like everybody thought you should? And don't sit here and complain about problems that I guess you've kind of created. Peyton Thorne didn't light up the world last year, and they just decided to roll with, you know, having Hank Brown in there and Peyton Thorne still in. Reaping what you sow right now.
I thought Freeze would win bigger at Auburn than he has. I thought he would win, and maybe he ends up winning big there eventually. I've heard them talk about that he sold the administration that it wasn't going to get rolling until year three, so maybe he saw some things that the rest of us don't see. I just thought they would be a lot further along under him than they are. That's really one of the surprising teams, I think, right now. In the SEC. We got way more to talk about Arkansas and Auburn, but first we need to tell you or give you a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Continuing to talk about Arkansas and Auburn, Razorbacks win 24-14 down on the Plains. Ethan, Arkansas's defense was opportunistic, forced 5 turnovers. Defensive coordinator Travis Williams got the game ball afterward, going back to Auburn, where he's been. Obviously, he was a player. He was a graduate assistant coach, was a former assistant coach there. Pittman gave him the game ball afterward, and I think Pittman may have said that's the first time that he's ever given a game ball since he's been at Arkansas, which I found kind of interesting. So I guess some coaches believe in that. Some coaches, don't believe in it quite as much. But the player of the game was T.J. Metcalf. I mean, this was like watching one of those old Alabama safeties and how they would just totally wreck a game. He ends up with 2 interceptions. He's one of Arkansas's leading tacklers. He has 4 solo tackles during the game. He tips a pass that's intercepted. And then I thought the play of the game was the strip of Alston, Damari Alston, the Auburn running back. It's a 36-yard gain. It looks like he's, he gets the inside position on a guy, and it looks like he's going into the end zone. And he just kind of holds the ball out a little bit too far, and Metcalf right there opportunistically knocks it away. he's from the Birmingham area, played at Pinson Valley High School, and I don't know, it kind of looked like he was playing Saraland or somebody instead of playing Auburn, but it was just an incredible performance that he had. It was easily the best game that he's had as a Razorback, and, you know, he's for a secondary that's beat up, I thought it was a good sign for Arkansas to see Metcalf have that kind of game.
For sure. I mean, he earned the starting role in the offseason. Now, you heard Sam Pittman just over and over praising him. So did Travis Williams and Marcus Woodson, all of them. But I think that this was the type of performance that let you see why. You just opportunistic is the word. And that I think that forced fumble near the goal line, that was probably, if not the play of the game, it's up there as one of them. I mean,
it's probably 7-7 going into halftime he doesn't make that.
And I'm a big believer in momentum. I know some people aren't, but let me tell you, that stadium was like ready to explode, and it took so much energy out of that stadium. It felt like to me that was the biggest momentum shifting play of the whole game. Satania's catch was up there for sure too, but that forced fumble, just it felt like Auburn had already been just making so many mistakes through the air with the interceptions thrown, and there it felt like they were maybe starting to figure some things out, and they were, like you said, gonna go tie the game, and it just took all the energy out of that stadium. I think you hit the hammer on the nail though about Arkansas had kind of a depleted secondary entering this game, and they more than rose to the challenge. TJ Metcalf, big game. I thought Danico Slaughter played really well. He had that one interception on a pass that Metcalf tipped. Like, even whenever Metcalf wasn't getting the takeaway, he was causing it. He just had an incredible game. I thought Jaden Johnson, I know that on that fourth and I think three from Auburn's own.
Oh, yeah.
He got burnt on that. He made a bad angle or what. I don't know what he did. But
he just totally overran the receiver, and there was nobody left in the middle of the field.
Yeah, that was a low light, but other than that, I mean, he had an interception and he played a pretty good game aside from that.
Gave up a touchdown, but he got an interception that kind of, I guess, maybe offset it some.
Yeah. I thought he played pretty well. Keon Stewart played well. He broke up a pass early. The Arkansas secondary came to play, in my opinion. Keandre Lambert Smith, the Penn State transfer receiver for Auburn, I think he's a really good receiver, and he kind of diced him up a little bit, but whenever you hold a team to 14 points and you have, what did Arkansas have, four interceptions, five total turnovers, four interceptions, one forced fumble, that's a good game for your secondary.
This is what Sam Pittman had to say afterward.
Well, I don't know if I've said it in here. I've been at radio, but Trav gave Travis the game ball. I think it meant a lot to him. Playing here, I know he's got love for Auburn, but I know that win was big for him. It had to be. The game plan, I went back and forth in there several times this week and go, hey, now we're going to make that quarterback beat us. We're going to make the quarterback beat us. And Tuesday wasn't exactly what I thought, how he was going to make the quarterback beat us. I said, hey, coach, we haven't put in this. And I thought they did a wonderful job.
So that was Sam Pittman talking about the defensive performance over the weekend at Auburn. I want to go back. You were talking about the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said that I thought Jordan-Hare is one of the more underrated atmospheres in the SEC. And, as we watch those videos, I told you earlier I was having flashbacks. I remember Brett Bielema walking into that room after they got beat 56-3 8 years ago. And the first play of that game, Auburn runs a jet sweep to this real fast receiver that they have, and they take it for 70, 80 yards and a touchdown, and the place just goes nuts. And it just kept building. Arkansas would, go three and out, boom, another touchdown, boom. And when that place gets going, it's a hard, hard place to play. And, you can just feel the electricity in that building. And Arkansas was able to tamper that the other day, but you were real – you were struck. You and I were talking. You were struck by how good of an atmosphere they have at Auburn.
Yeah, and it's kind of just the way they even do the whole pregame. The place is juiced up before the kickoff even happens. I mean, I'm a certified zoo lover. I like going to the zoo. I'm not afraid to say it. I like animals. I think they're cool. And the whole eagle flying around thing was,
that's neat.
That was awesome.
That's real neat.
And that place, it's just like such a unique tradition that is. And it comes at the end of them already just like I don't even know what all they do. It's hard to put a finger on how they get the place so juiced up, but they had a stripe out. They had their eagle soaring and landing. It was an awesome place, and it just kind of highlighted me. I know there's a lot of people who work really hard at Arkansas to try and make it a good game day environment there. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just bash how Arkansas does it, because I know there's a lot of folks who that's their part of their job, and they try hard. It's just I don't know how Arkansas gets to that level of game day environment. I know it helps that Auburn has a bigger stadium that's 88,000, but
see, I don't know I don't know so much that it's about attendance though. You can have a smaller stadium and still have a real electric environment. They just do a great job in their game day operations at Auburn.
I think that also kind of how the student section is situated there helps. They're just kind of it's a big Arkansas has a bowl, but one of the end zones is way smaller.
Premium seats.
Yeah, and so the back of their end zones are packed, mm-hmm. and it's higher up that it goes, and I just think that you kind of feel swallowed in there, in my opinion, and they're really engaged. I don't know what Arkansas has to do to get to that level, but it can make a real difference. I mean, for Fernando Carmona, I think it was him who said after the game, when asked about the environment, he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that was electric." I mean, Arkansas's players, I think it struck them how good of an environment it was, and I think we shouldn't forget that that's a 2-1 Auburn team that had lost to Cal, and they had that type of environment. You know, Arkansas, I think, has a bit to go to try and get to that level of game day. I mean, there's been some good moments, like the Texas win a few years ago. It was pretty electric in Fayetteville. The Ole Miss game under Brett Bielema, pretty electric. But, you know, I don't know. A lot of times I'll go to an Arkansas game and it feels like the stadium's almost sleepwalking. Mm. And I didn't get that sense at all at Auburn. And I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to just make this a bashing how Arkansas does it. I don't know how you fix it, but it wasn't the same.
Maybe the hardest road environment Arkansas play in this year.
Probably.
It was tougher than Stillwater, I think.
You think Mizzou's going to be
tougher than Auburn? Here's the deal. They're going to play at Mississippi State. Mississippi State's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a terrible football team. Maybe they get up for that game, but I'm kind of guessing people are checking out on Mississippi State this morning in Mississippi State football after this 3-week run that they've had. And oh, by the way, they got to go to Texas this week. Missouri, it's Thanksgiving weekend, and it seems like that always kind of affects the attendance in this Arkansas Missouri game for whatever reason. Now, maybe Missouri is undefeated at that point. I would be surprised if that's the case. You know, but if they're competing for a playoff, that probably changes things some.
I don't think a playoff contending Missouri crowd is going to be better than Auburn.
Well, it's not Black Friday anymore in the Arkansas Missouri game, and I think that also kind of might make a little bit of a difference. But well, every time I've gone up to Columbia for a game, I've left. You know, it's like they didn't lose because of the crowd. And they might have lost because it felt like, you know, it was 20 degrees outside and you couldn't feel your fingers. Who knows why that happens at Columbia, but they just don't ever play that well up there. But I don't ever feel like it's really because of the game day crowd, because I've never been real impressed by what they do at Missouri.
Since we're on the topic of these away environments that Arkansas is going to go to this year, I'm going to die on my hill real quick. There's two things me and Tom Murphy, who covers the Arkansas Democrat or covers Arkansas football for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, have in common. We're both Falcons fans, and that stunk last night against the Chiefs. And the second thing is, we are ready to campaign that with the new headset communication stuff, Mississippi State, there is no reason they should be allowed to have cowbells. You see already in these environments, like the game that was that Ireland between Georgia Tech, Florida State? I mean, that's in Ireland, and you see the quarterbacks holding their headset like this, trying to get. And if you go to Mississippi State, just because you have a smaller stadium, they have a smaller stadium, so it should benefit other teams. It's not going to be as rowdy as a road environment like Auburn. But imagine trying to get communication on your headset, and you have 50,000.
That's a great point.
Rattling their cowbells. That's not fair. It just isn't. No other school's doing that. Imagine if Auburn had 88,000 people ringing cowbells. How do you even not get hospitalized from that headache? Oh, my goodness. I don't want to ever go to a Mississippi State game, because I think that I already struggle. I cover Arkansas women's basketball elementary day. That's just 15,000 kids screaming. I can't imagine 50,000 cowbells.
I think the worst headache I've ever had was when Arkansas played a double overtime game at Mississippi State in 2010. I mean, I drove back to South Haven that night, and my ears were still ringing. And that'd been like 5 hours after the game ended, because you work for a couple of hours, then you've got, you know, about a 2.5-hour drive on. It's rough there. Yeah, that's a great point.
And it's I already thought it shouldn't happen.
The SEC treats Mississippi State with kid gloves when it comes to cowbells. Like, I mean, seriously, like, what if LSU and Death Valley said, "Hey, we're going to start a cowbell tradition"? You think they would allow that?
Yeah,
no, they wouldn't.
It's an unfair competitive advantage.
Maybe that's how you get Mississippi State to end the cowbell deal. Is like all the other schools just kind of band together and say, "We're going to bring cowbells too."
I think something should happen. It just is not fair, especially I already didn't think it was fair without helmet communication, but now that there is, that literally you can take another part of the team's they operate kind of out of the game.
Yeah, that's a good point. At Mississippi State, they've got these signs that they put on the video boards up in the end zone, and it says "Ring responsibly."
Yeah, like that happens. Oh, since we're talking about scoreboards too, I want to give a shout out to Jordan-Hare Stadium. Of course, every stadium has like the big electronic scoreboard where you can see video replay, but they had opposite that, just like an old school scoreboard that reminded me of like a high school game. Like it you had the little tiny yellow lights that formed the word Auburn once they were all lit up, and Arkansas. It just was such a old
old Daktronic.
Yeah, it felt like such an old school feel. It felt like you were at a true Deep South SEC football game, and I liked it.
Yeah, it's a cool environment there. PFF stats, you wrote about this yesterday on our site. What were some of the things that stood out to you? I'll tell you, I know you're pulling it up right here. One of the things that stood out to me, though, was TJ Metcalf got a really, really high grade.
Yeah, that's the top thing I was going to point out is TJ Metcalf had a really good grade. I think that PFF broke it down. He had 38 plays that he was in, 38 coverage plays, and his receiver was targeted 3 times and 0 catches. He had an 89.9 overall grade, which that is really high in PFF terms. I think that was to be expected. Isaiah Satania had the top offensive grade for the Razorbacks. I'm sure that really impressive catch helped out with that. The amount of concentration that took for him to pull that in is pretty high because he's already it's kind of underthrown, which is people have been bashing Taylen Green for underthrowing that. I mean, he was kind of on the run, and I thought just getting it down there was important. Like, a lot of quarterbacks couldn't have gotten it that far on the run like that. But anyway, Satania had to maintain his balance while he's getting, probably should have been a pass interference, caught it over the guy. The level of concentration I think it takes to be getting hit and make a catch like that is really – it just goes to show how Isaiah Satania is kind of a gamer, mm-hmm. in my opinion, as far as, like, he's just got those athletic, freakish traits that make a guy be able to do things like that. And I think that was huge for Arkansas for him to have that moment, because Satania is this guy that I think the past 2 years at least we've talked about how just kind of waiting for him to break out, and he hasn't necessarily yet. But that catch was the type of play that could get him really going, I think. He's been, to date, the Razorback's second-best receiver behind Andrew Armstrong. So, his grade was a 74 by PFF. He played 50 total snaps. I also thought, one of the things that stood out to me from the PFF grades was Landon Jackson only had a 60.7, which is low in terms of him. I felt like, personally, this is where I think we take PFF grades with a grain of salt. Like, watching the game live, I felt like Landon Jackson really had a pretty big impact. It felt to me like he was disruptive the whole game. He came up with a few big tackles. It just felt to me watching it live like he was way more disruptive than maybe his PFF grade, makes it look like.
Are you talking about Satania? I sent this to you this weekend, Ethan, and so you know what I'm going to talk about. I want to show two plays here. First one is the play that he made against Auburn the other day on the 3rd and 19 throw from Taylen Green. I think Blake's got that queued up, and he can play it while we're talking.
Green spins away. Launches, has a man wide open. It hung, touchdown, a miracle by Taylen Green. Taylen Green.
Yeah, so maybe the best play that we've seen this year from Arkansas offensively, just an awesome play that Satania made over the top of that defensive back.
Keontae Scott got mossed.
Yeah. All right, Blake, that's good. Now, we've got another video that we're going to pull up here in just a second, and it was his catch against Conway High School his senior year at Fayetteville. I call Fayetteville's game, so this was the first play that I thought about and Blake's gonna pull that up. Blake, you can turn the volume down on that while we talk over it. But this was a play against Conway. This was in the season opener of his senior year against Conway, and you can see it's kind of a similar thing where the quarterback throws deep. It's just a very similar catch that he made where he kind of has to go back and catch it up over the top of the defensive back. Blake, that's good. Appreciate it. And he was so that was the first play that came to my mind whenever he made that catch. It's like, I have seen him do that before.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of potential in there.
Yeah, I think that anybody who saw him play at Fayetteville, I know it's so much difference going against Arkansas high school competition to SEC, but you saw the traits in him that will translate, of just the freakish athleticism. And that was cool to see those videos.
And sometimes I feel like it's, I don't know if unfair is the right word. I feel like sometimes we expect players to come in and be great too early.
Mm-hmm.
And that we forget that, you know, the best college seasons typically are by guys who have, you know, been in a program for 3 or 4 years, and it just takes time for them to maybe acclimate. Maybe it takes longer for some players, or it takes a longer time for some players than it does other. Isaiah, he's dealt with some ankle injuries in the past. He did the football, the track thing for a while, which I think may have, you know, I mean, I don't think that there's any doubt that it probably slowed his football development. Even though it, you know, it may have helped him athletically, it slows the football development when you're trying to play two different sports. I think he's got the potential to be really good. And I think that we're just starting to scratch the surface of what he could be in this offense. And it looks to me like Taylen Green and Zetania are starting to kind of develop a little bit more of a rapport with one another as the season goes along. He had a big catch at Oklahoma State that, you know, helped set up a game-tying drive in the fourth quarter there. Obviously, that catch the other day, you got to have trust in your receiver to heave it 65 yards in the air and think that he's going to make a play like he did.
Yeah, and I think this just goes to show what we said all offseason, that it looks like Petrino and this offense really likes Zetania. That's not a surprise. He likes fast guys, fast receivers. But shout out to Isaiah for – I think it's really tough for players who are highly touted out of college to not see the production in year one or year two that they envisioned or that other people envisioned for them. But he – didn't transfer, he just stuck with it, and he's in a system right now that I think actually fits him better than any of them have to this point of his career. I think that he's a guy that, you know, you say this sometimes with people, I really mean it with him. I feel like his ceiling is so high just if when he's in the right system and gaining that confidence. I think that a more confident Isaiah Zetania is going to pay dividends for the Arkansas offense.
I think he's
going to
make some more big plays throughout the year. By the way, that was a 3rd-and-19 play. Arkansas on 3rd-and-long, talking about these PFF scores, they were just awesome on 3rd-and-long. It was almost like the longer the 3rd down, the better they were in that down, and they've been really good on 3rd down this year.
Yeah, I wrote about that. They were 55.5%, 5 for 9 on 3rd-and-long. They were actually better than that than short and long. They were 2 of 6 on 3rd-and-long, or 3rd-and-short.
Mm-hmm.
Taylen Green was a better passer on 3rd-down, too. He was a 75% passer on 3rd. On 3rd downs, his only mistake was that 3rd-and-12 interception, the drive prior to Malachi Singleton coming in for possession. But on other downs, he was 31.6%. So it's just kind of a weird thing that Arkansas was so good in 3rd-and-longs.
We'll take a look around the SEC when we come back.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA. A unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
A Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us, sticking with us today. We got a bad case of the Mondays. We're sleepy up here. We're trying to kick it up a notch here on this final segment. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs and the highest quality products. You can come by and see them today at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. We also want to tell you that Hunter Yurachek is going to be at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Wednesday at noon, Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Looking forward to talking with Hunter Yurachek about a number of things that we'll probably get into it with him. NIL obviously was a big topic last week. Nobody's talking about NIL today because Arkansas got an SEC road win. But, you know, what's the future of Bud Walton Arena and the renovation there? That's something that obviously ties into NIL. He's on the College Football Playoff Committee. Lots of things that we want to get into Hunter with on Wednesday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. So we hope that you will join us there. And if you're not able to make it, we'll replay that interview later this week on our podcast. Also want to mention that Arkansas soccer is still unbeaten. They had a couple of wins late in the week, 1-0 over LSU last Thursday, and then yesterday they beat Missouri 8-2 over at Razorback Field. They scored 6 goals in the first half. I turned it on for a little bit and watched a little bit of that. That team is really good.
Yeah, but Colby Hale's mad about the two goals scored.
I was talking to Anthony, who covers the soccer team. He said, I've never talked to a coach who was that unhappy after a 6-goal win. And I think that's probably what makes Colby such a great coach. Is just they're not going to sit back and say, hey, you know, we beat a team by 6. He's going to focus on the stuff that he didn't like.
I'll never
forget.
And
he'll be able to push their buttons. And I bet that they've got a training session, whether it's today or tomorrow, that's going to be unlike any team that's ever won by 6 the day before.
I'll never forget the Chad Morris Arkansas team that scored however many points it did on Alabama, how mad Nick Saban was after that game. Alabama won by like
30. You would have thought Arkansas won that game the way they were celebrating. We scored 31 on Alabama, all 65-31, but
yeah.
It's coming.
It's a good coach, though, that sees the things that will trouble you in the long run. And Colby Hale, I think, has proved that he's a really good coach.
The Razorbacks are number 3 right now in the national coaches poll. They play Vanderbilt this week on the road. I think that's Thursday night. And then South Carolina, which is always a great measuring stick. They will be here on Sunday at Razorback Field for a 1:00 start time. By the way, Kelly Rolliard, who covers or she calls their games on the SEC Network Plus, she'll be with us later this week to talk about this Arkansas soccer team. And something to watch for this week, they might get to number 1 in the poll for the first time in program history. Stanford lost last week. Florida State tied. Those were ranked number 1 and 2 ahead of Arkansas. Razorbacks number 3, the highest ranking they've ever had in the coaches poll. Potentially could move up. We'll see how that goes. But this looks like a really, really good Arkansas soccer team.
Yep. And I think, I mean, at minimum, they'll probably set a new – they tied a program record ranking this past week. And with those two, the results of the teams in front of them, at minimum, will probably set their outright highest rank, I think, at least number 2.
You know, don't sneeze. I know, like, a lot of times we get so focused up in football and baseball and basketball, but, you know, appreciate these other great programs that are on campus.
Colby Hale has said before that whenever he took over the job, some publication, I'd like to figure out who it was, I could probably find it, called this the graveyard job of college soccer, that nobody can escape it without, you know, killing their career, and look what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, it's been phenomenal. He may be the best coach on campus.
Yep.
Look around the SEC this weekend. Tennessee beat Oklahoma 25-15. Didn't really surprise me, but boy, Oklahoma's offense just looked totally inept. They are going to have some problems in the SEC. They can't block anybody. They've had some injuries on their offensive line. Branson Hickman, who was, you know, recruited here to Arkansas, an SMU transfer at center, he was just back for the Tennessee game. I think he had missed about 2+ games with an ankle injury. I think they've still got a tackle who's out right now. And so, you know, maybe they get some of those guys back into their positions and they get them rolling, and maybe they get a little bit better on the offensive line. But, you know, they go to Auburn this weekend, and both of those teams have a real quarterback problem. We talked about Auburn's. For Oklahoma, you know, they basically chose to keep Jackson Arnold over Dylan Gabriel, or at least that's kind of the way it's been reported over in Oklahoma, that they had a couple of 5-star quarterbacks, and they couldn't afford to keep both of them, and so Gabriel ends up going to Oregon. Jackson Arnold, who you know is younger, he ends up staying at OU. And if he's the answer, it certainly doesn't look like it right now.
For sure. And, I mean, that was a good Tennessee defense that they went against, but you can't pretend like the prior results. Like, you can maybe show some grace if that's the first time it's looked like this all year, but there's not been a lot of not much to like from their other games. I guess you can probably throw aside the Temple performance. But
even from what Barry Tramble told us a few weeks ago, that they didn't even look good against Temple. They won 51-3, but
yeah. –
Yeah, again, it was like one of those when you out-talent somebody by so much, you may win by a lot, but there's still some glaring weak. Arkansas, Western Carolina, a perfect example last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I think Missouri is a good example of that this year. They were shutting out teams their first 2 weeks, and you heard people from that camp reporting on them saying there's some problems.
We'll get to Missouri. We'll get to them. Tennessee, they come here in 2 weeks. They don't play this weekend. They're off. I don't know how I feel about Tennessee right now, because I thought the win over North Carolina State was one of the more impressive games that I had seen this year. And then North Carolina State, they go to Clemson last weekend, and they basically get beat the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
They scored more points, but I think it was like 28-0 Clemson at the end of the first quarter. And Clemson scores 59 on them before they put the backups. I mean, they rolled North Carolina State real good. I think Oklahoma's got maybe not a great defense. I think they've got a real good defense. They got a lot of thumpers. I mean, mm-hmm. they can hit, man.
Yeah.
And they made Tennessee's offense not look as good the other night. I don't know. I'm not saying that I think Arkansas beats Tennessee or anything like that. I just don't know that I'm as high on Tennessee today as I was last Monday.
Yeah, that's something that we'll see played out the rest of the year, is how good actually is Tennessee. But I'd agree with you, the NC State win doesn't look as good. I mean, NC State experienced the Western Carolina, win, but the exposed type of deal this year. They had not a great game against them. But yeah, Tennessee right now, you'd have to think they're in the playoff. Like, they're one of the teams in the SEC you expect will make the playoff at this juncture, but, you know, a lot can change.
Well, you see what happened to Tennessee's equipment truck this weekend?
Yeah, I'm the one who sent you this.
Okay. So they're rolling back from Norman. We got video of this here. This was from Greg Yarbrough of KRK, the video, obviously an RDOT camera. This is on I-40 at North Little Rock. They're rolling back from Norman, going over to Knoxville, and in order to do that, you got to go down the worst stretch of highway, I think, in America, between Little Rock and Memphis down I-40. And their equipment truck wrecked. No injuries reported, so that's good. I don't know. Maybe is that an omen of things to come for in the state of Arkansas for Tennessee?
Maybe. I mean, they crashed in Arkansas one time. If they crash here in, what is that, week six? That's week six or seven.
Two in like 12 days.
And whatever. Yeah. They can't afford to crash in Arkansas then, because that would put a real damper on their hot start.
I'm curious how they get their stuff back to Knoxville, because that truck didn't look like it was going anywhere, or the trailer didn't.
Yeah, who knows? I just can't imagine what it's like for other cars driving by before it really, I'm sure, you know, like police and stuff got it under control or probably got halted traffic. But just imagine driving by and you just see a big Tennessee truck.
These football trucks, they travel some insane distances. I mean, is UCLA, are they driving their truck cross country for all these transcontinental games in the Big Ten?
You wonder if they are, how many days in advance you got to...
Well, you got to leave like 3 days in advance, yeah. Or, you know, maybe two. But what I'm saying is I'm surprised that we don't see more of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was watching, before the week zero, Montana State, they had this drone video of their truck pulling out of their parking lot, this very grand exit that they were taking out of Bozeman, and they were going to Albuquerque. And I'm just sitting there thinking, it's like, think about that drive from Montana to New Mexico and the type of terrain that they have to drive across to get the equipment there in time. Anyway, I don't know. It's just glad everybody's okay, but
got to be a lonely job driving.
You would think you might see that.
Got to be a lonely job driving that.
I think we did something, well, it's probably been about 10 years or so ago. I think we did a feature where a reporter, maybe they rode along with the truckers and like did kind of a behind the scenes type deal of this is what an equipment truck driver's weekend looks like.
Interesting stuff. Helmet sticker for those guys who do that, because that sounds terrible to me.
Missouri did everything they could to gift Vanderbilt a game the other day, 30-27. The Tigers end up winning in double overtime. Vanderbilt, they just vandied. I think that's probably the best way to say this. They missed a field goal. Not that it was an easy field goal because it was at an angle, but they miss a field goal in double overtime that, you know, would have forced the 2-point conversion fest and triple overtime and beyond. Feels like they kind of, I don't know if you would say they outplayed Missouri, because Missouri had some kicker problems of their own. But, Missouri, I'm still very much in a, I said this the other day, no pun intended, I'm very much in a show me state about Missouri. They need to show me something, because I don't know that I've seen it from them to warrant the type of ranking they have.
For sure. I mean, I think that without any the preseason love they got, which they earned from last year, that a lot of that offense coming back from that team they had, without that, though, I mean, this isn't a team that anybody's thinking is good at all. That game against Boston College wasn't that impressive, and then Vandy was sure underwhelming. I think they dropped in the AP poll like 4 spots, which tells you everything you need to know about kind of how their national perception is changing. But yeah, Vandy just kind of vandied. I think you said it right. Except actually, maybe they didn't, because normally Vandy's not even in a game. But you got to feel
they're playing hard this year.
They're playing hard, and I think that, you know, if anything else, Vandy's got to feel good about the fact that right now it looks like in SEC hierarchy, they are not in the basement. That's reserved for Mississippi State.
Oh, big time. We'll get to that in a minute. Drinkwitz has had a lot of issues over the years with clock management. And he had another one at the end of the first half against Vanderbilt, where basically they go for it on 4th down, they get stopped, and Vanderbilt has enough time to, I don't know, run a play, maybe 2 plays, and they get to the 40, and they're able to kick a 57-yard field goal. And it felt like that might cost Missouri the football game.
Yeah, and Drinkwitz, I think something similar happened against Kansas State last year, and they found a way to win that game. You know, some head-scratching stuff. Yeah,
it took like a 60-something-yard field goal by Harrison Meavis, but they were able to win it.
Yeah, but not an impressive win for Mizzou, and I think that, you know, you look at their schedule, and, I mean, it's easier than a lot of other people's, but at the same time, you know, I don't know if I go into their – they play Texas A&M pretty soon, and I wouldn't –
Yeah, they play them in College Station after a bye week.
I wouldn't be putting any money on Missouri if I'm a better.
Well, I mean, Missouri, they still have to play Alabama. A lot of people have talked about how soft their schedule is, and there may be some validity to that. They don't play Tennessee. They don't play Georgia. They don't play Ole Miss. They don't play Texas.
But they do play UMass.
here's where I'm going. You got me flustered. Here's where I'm going with this. Whether it's A&M, whether it's South Carolina, maybe it's OU with that defense. Maybe it's Arkansas at the end of the year. I think a team, or maybe multiple teams, that Missouri is going to be favored to beat is going to pick them off this year.
Yeah, they give me those vibes for sure. It's a team that I think the first time they have a team just physically take it to them, you might see them exposed a little.
I thought that they were so reliant upon that running back last year, Schrader, and they don't have him now. That maybe, you know, the fact that they were able just to turn around and give it to him 25, 30 times a game, maybe it like made you overlook some of the other things that were going on there, like quarterback play. You know, Brady Cook, he made a couple of nice passes late in the game the other day, but I don't know that he's the quarterback that you say, hey, go win us the game.
Yeah, I will say Nate Noel, their running back they have now, he's doing a nice job. He's 3rd in the SEC with 441 yards. His average is 6.4 yards per carry. But, you know, you have to factor in the schedule that they've played. Is that sustainable? Schrader showed last year how he could play in any game. So we'll see how they do.
Florida beat Mississippi State 45-28. The Gators scored 45 points in 10 possessions. I cannot overstate how efficient that is. Just an incredibly efficient game for them offensively. Mississippi State's defense looks terrible. They made Graham Mertz look like Joe Burrow the other day. I mean, he went like 19 of 21 through 3 touchdowns. Mississippi State loses its starting quarterback. I haven't seen what the severity of that injury is, but they don't look good. They can move the ball. They can't stop teams, though. And I'm not sure Mississippi State wins 2 more games this year. They do play UMass, although UMass, I was looking at their schedule, they actually played Toledo closer this year than Mississippi State played Toledo, if you want to get into the comparing score deal. I think this team could very easily finish winless in SEC play. And I would think Arkansas, you know, looking down the road, is going to feel very good about its chances going to Starkville and winning a game there and maybe having a real big offensive performance.
Yeah, I think the Mississippi State's a team right now that they're – talk about a team searching for answers. They just don't have them, on, like you said, on defense right now. I think that it's definitely a – that's, other than Louisiana Tech, the most winnable game left on Arkansas' schedule. So it will be interesting to see how if Mississippi State can figure out anything defensively, because if not, they're going to get picked apart all year.
I think at this point you think Arkansas should beat Mississippi State. You think they should beat Louisiana Tech. They're 3-1 right now. That means that, you know, whether it's A&M, whether it's LSU, maybe Missouri at the end of the year, you know, if you can get one of those teams, you get to bowl eligibility. And, you know, that's the first step. But I don't think just going 6-6 is the goal either. I think this team's got a little bit higher ambitions than that. Week five games in the SEC, Alabama goes to Georgia. That's the game everybody's talking about. Then there's everybody else. So Arkansas plays A&M in Arlington on Saturday. Kentucky goes to Ole Miss. Oklahoma goes to Auburn. Mississippi State goes to Texas. And South Alabama goes to LSU off this week. There are five teams: South Carolina, Missouri, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Florida. We appreciate you being with us. Hope you'll come to our website throughout the week at wholehogsports.com as we preview the Arkansas A&M game. Sam Pittman will speak today. We'll have plenty of coverage from his press conference, and we'll be back with another podcast tomorrow as we continue to look forward to Arkansas and the Aggies down in Arlington. Have a great day, everyone.